This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
Capital of Texas, you're listening to the Austin Anthem podcast. Today we're going to talk about some MLS news, Austin FC hires, and then we're also going to have an interview today as part of kind of a broader series that we're looking to do in talking to the people who are involved in bringing Austin FC and creating Austin FC here in the city. So today's interview is going to be with Kristen Markham, who is the president of Elizabeth Christian PR. And yeah, well, like I said, we're hopefully going to have some other people going forward in the future episodes talking about similar stuff. So my name is Landon Cottom. I am joined today by Jeremiah Bentley. Jeremiah, hey. How's it going?
It's going great, Landon. I'm Jeremiah Bentley. So I was listening to, if you listen to Ronan Farrow's podcast, Catch and Kill?
No, I haven't.
It's really good. And it's sort of the background behind him revealing the Harvey Weinstein story and all the stuff that went into it. But at the end of that show every time, they're like, oh, well, this, you've been listening to Catch and Kill, and it's produced by Pineapple Street Media, and it's like written and edited and produced by like an army of people. And so I feel like maybe we should do that and be like, this show is written by Landon Cottom, produced by Landon Cottom, and edited by Landon Cottom. Like, your business card must be really long when it comes to, in terms of like podcasting professionalism. So I appreciate that. How do you feel about that?
I think that's pretty par for the course these days. I mean, there are of course like big national media companies who they essentially talk into the microphone and then somebody else edits and does all the other stuff. But for like small independent podcasts, like what ours is, I think that's pretty common. So it's just part of the job.
Okay. I appreciate that. Cause I feel like I just show up and talk and then you do all the work on top of
it. No, you help prepare a lot of the show notes. So I appreciate all of your work, Jeremiah.
This was about validating me. So I'm glad that we could do that in the opening. Thank you.
All right. Let's jump into some MLS news. So, biggest news in MLS in maybe a long time, Chicharito has now officially signed with LA Galaxy. So what do you think this means for the league, Jeremiah?
I mean, the common wisdom is that this is the biggest thing since Beckham, right? In terms of both name and then in terms of where they're in their career. So he's 31. I believe Beckham was also 31 at the time when he signed with the exact same club, the LA Galaxy. So, I mean, that's a good thing that we've hopefully got somebody with productive years ahead of him in the future. I know there was this weird spell, especially when NYFC and them came in, where we were signing retirement league, you know, European guys. But this seems like somebody with a lot to still give, and not Steven Gerrard or not Pirlo or not the coach of Chelsea.
Oh, yeah, Lampard.
Yeah, Lampard. You know, they're really like on their last legs and sort of doing a retirement tour. So I think it's a good signing for the league overall. What I didn't see a lot about when I researched was what it means tactically for the Galaxy. So I don't know if you have like seen any more about that, but the story seems to be a lot about the story and about what he means and who he is and how he's going to bring in, you know, revenue and excitement, but not necessarily like the on the field effect.
Yeah, I've read and heard a few things talking about this, and I think most people are seeing it as a positive. He's not as his top end isn't as high as Zlatan's was, but he does more than what Zlatan could do. And Chicharito is a person who will work hard and will run and will get back and defend and will do some of the dirty work, kind of. Zlatan was never going to do that. And so you essentially needed to cater to Zlatan and build your offense and your team more or less around what he felt like doing. Chicharito is not going to be that situation. So who knows if he's the perfect fit for what Schelotto wants to do, but he will definitely put in more work and be a bit more of an adaptable player than what Zlatan ever was.
Yeah, I think, and he fits in well to that, because obviously that was the biggest need, was a striker. And like you said, he's not going to strike fear in the hearts of anybody else, you know, in terms of hitting a volley from 35 yards out or whatever. But
I still think he's going to be a very good player in MLS. Like,
yeah,
he's like maybe not the best ever, but he's going to be a great player in this league.
Yeah, and I didn't watch him play a lot. So can you talk a little bit about his game overall?
I think historically, like he's been considered a poacher, and I think there for a long time, especially when he was at Manchester United. I think people criticized him for scoring kind of cheap, easy goals, but it's. it's a skill to be in the right place to score those goals. And so he's kind of that fox in the box, always in the right place at the right time type of guy. But like I said before, he'll do some dirty work and we'll make those runs to open up space for other people, or we'll get back and defend when he needs to as well. So yeah, he's not going to be one of those strikers. Like he's not Carlos Vela, who can create a goal out of nothing just by himself. If you give him the ball, he's going to create something. He's not that type of player. But he is, I think he's pretty versatile and a pretty useful player in several other ways. And so, yeah, like I said, as far as being the biggest, you said you think maybe it's one of the biggest signings since Beckham. I think depending on how you're valuing that, that's definitely true. As far as the best player that's been signed in MLS, I don't think that's right. He's still probably maybe top 10 in that category, but as far as just the overall value on and off the field that he's going to bring to the league, it's absolutely enormous. And if you watch an interview with him, you understand why. He's beloved by Mexican fans. And then I think people who don't really know who he is, and just you watch a couple of interviews with him, he's a very passionate guy. And he's not one of these athletes where you ask him a question and he's going to give you the rehearsed two-sentence answer and, I'm going to work really hard for the team and we hope we have great. He's not that kind of guy. He's going to say what he's thinking, and he's been known to just, yeah, he's going to speak his mind and give you an entertaining answer usually, but he also just seems like a pretty cool guy too. So I think the fans who don't already love him in LA, I think they're going to very soon.
Yeah, I think when you talked about it in terms of speaking his mind, so there was a little controversy that was created on social media,
yeah,
right? Especially on, you know, among the Twitter warriors over the last, I think it was last week, when they showed some kind of intimate video of him talking to his family about what this means. And he said it was the beginning of his retirement. And I think everybody that's a practical fan sort of understands that, because this is his time away from, he's been in Europe, this is his time away, and that's sort of the end of that chapter in his life. But I think I listened to Michelle Sanchez interview Grant Wall on the Austin Soccer Pod, you know, and Grant talked about the fact that, like, you can want your athletes to be real people, or you can want them to just speak in, you know, empty platitudes all the time. And anytime that somebody's like real and passionate, and then you create this giant outroar on social about it, like, that's just going to discourage that type of thought and action. I thought that was interesting. And also it's good for him, and it's like too bad overall.
Yeah. The whole retirement comment that he made, I think however you want to see that, you can see it. The way I look at it is he went to Europe, had dreams of winning Champions League, doing these types of things and being a really great player. The last few years haven't really gone that well for him. And it's just kind of been just wrong place, wrong time type of things, where he just hasn't gotten as much playing time, went through goal scoring droughts, whatever. And so I completely understand what he's saying. It's like, it's the end of an era. Like, by coming to MLS, there's a lot of things that he probably really wanted to do and had his hopes set on. And he's just not going to be able to do that. There's a famous phrase that he said, something about imaginando cosas chingonas, which is like imagining crazy things. Like he said, it's free. It doesn't cost you anything to imagine, like to dream about crazy things. So why not do it? And I think he was this guy who always dreamed about doing enormous things. And he did some of those things. He played for some of the biggest clubs in the world and had a great European career, but maybe fell short of some of those other dreams. And so I can completely understand that he feels like he's maybe giving up on that by coming to MLS. On the other hand, I feel like he's not taking this league lightly. He's going to come here and work really hard. And it seems like he's still very excited about doing this. It's just the end of an era. And I think it's completely acceptable for him to be a little bit sad about that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Speaking of natural transitions and being sad about things, let's talk about Nashville.
Oh man, poor Nashville. It's, I think in, especially on Twitter, where we spend a lot of time talking about soccer, it's a natural reaction for people to partake in a bit of schadenfreude and kind of enjoy other people's misery. But I think this is a situation where, but for the grace of God, there go Austin FC, or however that saying goes. Like, this very easily could have been us. So Tell us a little bit about what's going on in Nashville.
Yeah, I did. I was reading a Nashville, I believe it's the Nashville Sound is the name of the publication article this morning. And many of the words, like you just could have flipped Austin for Nashville and they would have been the same thing. So for those of you that don't spend a lot of time watching YouTube live streams of city council broadcasts, in September of 20, well, first of all, Nashville has a 40-person city council, which seems absurd and awful and like something nobody should ever have to do.
Ours is 10 plus 10, the mayor.
10 plus one. Yeah, it's 11. So 11. Yeah, there's enough drama with 11, but imagine 40. So in September of 2018, they had a vote that was 31-8 to do a deal with MLS to demolish some existing buildings at a fairgrounds, which would let them build a stadium there. And it was a really big win for, let's see, the mayor at the time, who was Mayor Briley. And that was in September of 2018. But the biggest opponent of this whole thing was an at-large city council member who's the mayor of Nashville now and basically ran on a whole platform of, you know, this deal is not a great deal. I'm going to need to be economic development for everybody. And like all these awful things that we heard from some people. And
that's,
so
that's like, so Austin's vote for the stadium passed 7-4. This would be the equivalent of one of those four, like the most outspoken of those four, then being elected mayor.
Yeah, so Mayor Poole. Mayor Poole was on that. Yeah. But I mean, they had a deal. Yeah, so they had this ironclad deal. And until this stadium gets built, Nashville is going to play at, I believe, Audi Field, which is where the Titans play. I know
it's Audi. Is that what it's called?
I know that's where the Titans play.
It's wherever the Titans play.
Yeah, where the Titans play. I don't remember the name of it, but they're going to play there. And that gets back to the whole, you know, kind of awful 20,000 people in a 70,000 seat stadium watching things that they want to get away from. And MLS said recently, so what happened is they got to the point where on Thursday, MLS and the ownership group of Nashville sent a letter to the mayor that basically said, you know, we made a deal. We wouldn't have made this deal if we didn't have surety that we were going to demolish this fairgrounds and that we were going to get civic involvement. We were going to build it. Like basically we would not have put a team in Nashville if we know the team was going to play long-term or the Titans are playing. And they're just kind of at an impasse where that seems to be the case. So they sent a letter on Thursday. I think the owner sent another letter on Friday saying that he was willing to commit even more money to it. Cause the financial commitment from the city is not that much, but I mean, it has grown, but still. And I will say, I'm just going to read the statement from the mayor responding to that. So since entering office 4 months ago, I've worked toward a complete solution for the fairgrounds. This past week, I met with racing advocates because apparently they want a NASCAR race there also, too.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's good. You get your soccer, you get your NASCAR, hopefully not at the same time. But he says...
Play a soccer match in the infield of a NASCAR track.
NASCAR race. Well, you know, Indianapolis Motor Speedway, I believe, has like a 9-hole golf course in the middle of it. Like it's so big around. You have a golf course inside of a track.
God bless America.
I know, it's everything. And there's probably like a chili cook-off and a hot dog eating contest and all those other things. But basically he's saying, I will continue to chart a path forward that makes good financial sense for Nashville's taxpayers. So, I mean, they seem to be at a real stopping point right now. And everything I've read leads me to believe that it's not going to resolve super early. So I think we should just appreciate that it's not that. And I also know it's affecting them in other ways. So, they don't get to keep they don't get to sign stadium sponsors and bring in the money, you know, that they could have otherwise because they're not in their own space and they have no progress toward their own space. And I think it's dampened season ticket expectations. I remember seeing somewhere, maybe on Twitter or something. I don't know if it was, you know, real news or Twitter news that maybe they've sold like 5,000 season tickets.
Yeah, I don't know what the number, like if the number was accurate, but there've been enough rumblings from enough credible sources saying that season ticket sales are not going like they would have wanted them to.
Yeah, so it had a negative effect all the way around, and it's super hard because they're going to start playing in a month, and to have that unresolved along with as unresolved as Miami is, like this has been a very dramatic year for expansion in terms of MLS for sure.
Yeah, it makes me reflect a little bit and just be thankful for the situation that we have, because all of this, there's just so many things that could have and might have gone wrong here in Austin, and things have really just fallen into place pretty perfectly. So Nashville, we're thinking of you. We hope this resolves quickly. Let's hit one more little piece of MLS news before we move on. So the MLS Players Association and the league are currently in negotiations over a new collective bargaining agreement. So collective bargaining agreement is an agreement that almost any workers union will have with their respective industries or employers. The most visible ones are usually with athletes. So in NBA, MLB, there's been strikes in the past. These leagues are a little bit different in that they're already the best league in their sport in the world. And so it's usually just, it's strictly about money and how much of the money are the owners going to give to the players. MLS, it's also about money, but it's a bit more than that. MLS is not the best league in the world. And so there's some smaller things that the Players Association is fighting for. One of them being, it's about mobility within the league. And so free agency, that was just entered in the 2015 CBA, the last CBA that they signed. Before then, there was no such thing as free agency in MLS. I think now it's still very limited. You have to be like 28 years old and have like 8 years of service in the league or something like that before you can be considered a free agent. So they're hoping to move that down and just change some rules in order to make it easier to move from club to club in MLS and just make it a more player-friendly league in that way.
Yeah, and there's actual literal mobility too. So the other thing I learned when I was reading about this is apparently MLS is the only major league in North America where the players are still traveling commercial. So they're just hopping on American or Southwest or whatever.
And
so
this isn't about the teams being too cheap to do it. It's the league actually has mandated maximum amount of chartered flights you can do. And so you kind of have to pick and choose which road trips you're going to use your charter flights on. And once you've used them up, you don't get any more. And so that's another thing players are fighting pretty hard for is, more chartered flights, because it sounds like a spoiled thing to say, like, oh, I need to fly in a private plane to my games, but this is their job and their livelihood. Imagine how you feel flying coach just from Austin to Denver or something, how bad your body feels after you get off that plane. And then imagine having to compete in a top level soccer match after that. So yeah, it's pretty simple things to ask for that I think everybody hopes, except for maybe the owners of the teams. But I think there's some pretty reasonable things that the players are asking for.
And I think it's really important right now, because unlike those other leagues when they did have strikes or lockouts, and they'd existed for decades and had a lot of, a lot of excitement and a lot of capital to build on. In Major League Baseball, they canceled the second half of their season in maybe 94, 95, but they were the biggest league in the world at that time, so they could afford it. I think one thing everybody appreciates with MLS is that there's a lot of excitement and growth and potential, and it would be a really, really bad idea right now to kill what they had built. And in some way, if they did that, I think it would be akin a little bit to the NHL, like late 90s, NHL had a half season. And I don't think they've ever really recovered from that, because at that point in time, 20 years ago, the National Hockey League was the next big thing, and they were expanding across the Sun Belt, and they were like really becoming a big deal. And I think that strike really killed a lot of that momentum, and I don't know that the National Hockey League's ever recovered too. So it's sort of a cautionary tale for MLS.
Yeah, I think the league and the players are all aware of that. So the current collective bargaining agreement expired at the end of January, or maybe like the 27th, I don't remember what day it was, but whenever that deadline hit, they essentially have in good faith extended the current CBA, and they'll continue negotiating. The deadline is the beginning of the season.
Right. The season starts on the 29th. And the way they do it, I just read this morning, they can agree to operate under the current rules of the current CBA in perpetuity. So even if it went past the end of the month, I mean, they would still, if they're almost there, they might still agree to keep negotiating and go ahead and open the season and just operate under the current rules. But that seems to be a deadline that they're going to work toward.
Yeah. And so you would expect, if things weren't going well, you would expect to be hearing grumblings about how they're not going well. And that hasn't really happened so far. So hopefully everything's going well and we'll have that new CBA here in the next couple of weeks. And it has implications for Austin FC in that we're starting to look at, we just hired a scouting director who we'll talk about here in a second, but we're going to be scouting players and signing players here in the next several months. And so this CBA will structure how all of that works. And so it's big implications for Austin FC as to how that changes. It's probably going to change the ideas of Claudio and Josh and who they're going to sign and how they're going to sign them.
Yeah, and that leads us to the hiring. So we had two big hires. We have the Academy Sporting Director, Juan Delgado.
That's,
and then we,
that's Dr. Juan Delgado.
Dr. Juan Delgado. That was very clear about that. And I read his like list of degrees, and he has like more degrees than classes I took in college. And he speaks four languages, Spanish, English, Catalan, and Portuguese, which I thought was super interesting. So when you read through that announcement and his bio, like what were the highlights for you, Landon?
I mean, the so he's been running a scouting or head of scouting for an academy in Doha, Qatar, working with the from U8 to U23. So I don't really know anything about that academy, but I imagine there's some money behind it. And he was,
yeah, in Qatar, there's a pretty good chance there's some money behind it for sure.
Yeah. But before then, I think this is the part that really stuck out to me was he was the technical director of Valencia in Spain, working with their youth systems. And then also before that for Villarreal. Those are two like not, I mean, they're not Madrid and Barcelona, but they're in that second echelon of teams in Spain.
They're in the Champions League more often than not, for sure. So they're the real deal.
Yeah. So he's going to be working, he'll work with Tyson Wall, who is the academy general manager. But yeah, one thing I did want to point out is, a list of players that came through his academies while he was working in Spain. See if you've heard of any of these guys, Jeremiah. David Silva of Manchester City.
Yes.
Juan Mata of Manchester United. Isco, yeah, plays for Real Madrid. Paco Alcácer, who played for Barcelona and then Dortmund, and Dortmund just sold him to Villarreal for $25 million. Jordi Alba plays for FC Barcelona. Joan Bernat, who plays for PSG. Santi Cazorla, who was a star at Villarreal and then at Arsenal. Bruno Soriano, who's currently Villarreal's captain. And Pablo Fornals, who is one of West Ham's best players right now.
So he's pretty good at developing players. So we should, that'll be good. We should get him here. Oh, wait, yeah. We have him here.
Yeah, so, and also just some of the stuff that he's implementing, like the tactical periodization, which is, I think, like, Guardiola and Mourinho and those types of coaches kind of popularized in European leagues. He's doing this top level academy stuff and is going to be bringing it here to Austin. So not only are we going to have a state-of-the-art stadium, state-of-the-art training facilities, but we're going to have the staff to go along with those facilities. So it's pretty encouraging news.
Yeah. That's the thing I've seen with both of these hires and everything else. I mean, the front office is positioned for success in a way that, you know, would definitely lead to doing that. I mean, Josh is going to have all the support he needs in terms of the back office, in terms of people who are great at developing players and leading organizations. And so there's no reasons that we shouldn't be able to succeed right from the start. And so we also have a director of scouting who, yeah, that is not a very Polish name.
No, he's a Spaniard also.
Okay.
So yeah, two Spaniards have been hired by the club. So Manuel Junco is his name. So he was at Liverpool for 6 years as the Eastern Europe scout for Rafa Benitez. We were talking about this in preparation before the show, and that kind of perked Jeremiah's ears up, like, oh, Liverpool.
I feel like you just threw that in there just that I would pay attention. So that would be, gosh, I'm trying to think. So Martin Skrtel was probably an Eastern European player Benitez signed.
I didn't think about that.
Yeah, at least him, and I'm sure there are others, but that's the one that immediately comes to mind. So he's really good at recruiting people who look like they could be members of the mob or extras in sort of heist movies.
We need a Polish hard man for Austin FC.
Yeah. Sure.
So yeah, he then worked for 3 years under Berhalter at Columbus, which I imagine is the connection to the Austin FC ownership. And his most recent job has been 3 years at Wisla Krakow. I'm sure I'm saying that incorrectly, but they've been a competitive and successful team during his tenure there. And he's also had a net positive balance on incoming outgoing transfers, which means he's sold players for more than what he bought them for, which means something in their system is working. He's finding value in players and bringing them into the club. The club's developing them and then selling them for more than what they were worth a few years before. So that's a positive sign too. One more little Austin FC bit of news before we go on. Claudio Reyna was interviewed on Soccer Matters, which is a radio show hosted by Glenn Davis. So Mr. Jorge Chavez was kind enough to take a bunch of notes on this interview, and we're just kind of poaching those from him. So
For sure. Like, Jorge's an engineer, and when you read, I think his his notes are probably longer than the actual interview lasted, and now I appreciate that and love that about him. But yeah, Jorge is a super detailed guy. So he was on, I believe that was last week on Soccer Matters?
Yeah, it wasn't the most recent episode, but the one before. So I've made a few notes of the things that I feel like are new information, just things that we didn't know beforehand. So one thing he mentioned is that he's just in talking to people and kind of recruiting staff who are going to come. He says that there's a lot of people who want to come to Austin. It's a very appealing opportunity for them to come live in the city, but also for what they've seen going on with the Austin FC hires and everything so far. He also said that when he started NYCFC, that you had to go out and find players to convince to come to MLS. And that's changed now. Players and agents are calling you, trying to get to MLS, trying to find a way to get to MLS. So he just talked about how that's changed in his, I guess, like 7 years total working for the league.
And I think that's a good tie back to the point that you just had about the chief scout. You know, is that that's a model that MLS has done a good job of developing and is like bringing in people from, particularly from South America, especially who are young, and developing them and then being able to sell them for a profit and move them onto the world. So I think that's a real, that'll be a good way that Claudio can connect to the work that we're doing, doing there through scouting, and really help build that up to have a positive benefit both on the field and then also a positive benefit in terms of the finances of the club.
Yeah. And in regards to scouting, he mentioned that he's open to players from anywhere, but he really wants to focus on South America and Mexico for recruiting. And when he talked about Mexico, he didn't say not specifically Mexican players, but even players from other countries who are currently playing in Mexico, which is a thing I hadn't really thought of, because there's a lot of, some of the biggest Mexican stars that were on the top of our wish list are gone now. So Pizarro looks like he's signing with Inter Miami. Chicharito just signed for LA Galaxy. So there's a lot of these bigger names are being snatched up before we're getting our turn in line. But I think maybe that, like, I mean, there's only one Chicharito. We can't sign another one of those. But if we can get someone who's a star in the Mexican league, even if they aren't Mexican, I think that would be a good plan B, maybe. Someone who, like, Gignac, who plays for Tigres. I know he's too old to come now and probably wouldn't anyway, but someone like that he's not Mexican, but he's been playing in that league for a long time and is a superstar in that league. And if we could get someone like that to come over, that might be a decent enough plan B until we can find a big Mexican star to come.
Yeah, and there's been a little bit of a pipeline of those players in the league overall just this offseason. So I know like three of the big signings that MLS has had in the offseason from Liga MX, I believe one was from Peru and two are from Argentina. So, I mean, if that's sort of, and it's, you know, younger players are developing. So hopefully we can build on that type of pipeline.
Yeah,
that others are doing and do it even better.
He mentioned that in the interview too. He said that in New York, those first years, he felt pressure to sign a big name, and that's not necessarily going to be as much the case now, that that he might more so be looking at younger guys that can come and become stars and then sell them on. So more like the Miguel Amiron model as opposed to the Zlatan Ibrahimovic model, which I'm 100% okay with. I'd rather grow our own Joseph than buy a Zlatan. So another thing that he mentioned was that Austin FC is unlikely to have a USL affiliate in this first year. Since the squad isn't going to be completely fleshed out, the academies are still going to be growing level by level every year. He said the first few months, he wants all the players to be in Austin. In those months, if it looks like there are some players that would benefit from playing more minutes, then he would start looking to loan some people out to USL teams with just kind of contacts they already have throughout the league. And then 2022, they'll reevaluate and see if they think kind of doing it piecemeal and sending players out to several different teams is the way to go, or if they want to have a dedicated USL affiliate, or maybe like a second team, kind of like LA Galaxy 2 or Seattle. Like, a lot of these teams just have a number two team. So he said that they'll be looking at that in that second year, but first year, it's likely that we're not going to have a USL affiliate or a second team. He also mentioned, this is not Austin FC related, but they talked about his son Gio, who made his debut for the Dortmund first team last week. Gio is just over 17 years old. He's like 17 in 3 months or 2 months or something like that. So he's just a kid, made his first team debut for Dortmund, did not look out of place one bit. He looks the part. And so, yeah, Glenn asked him about that. And the thing that I took away from it is that he just seems like he's a really good dad. He's like, yeah, I try not to tell him things. I try to just ask questions. And it's not my job to be his soccer coach is what I got from it. It's like, he's a professional. He's living abroad. He's got people doing that for him. So I try to be more of a support system, ask him questions, give him my advice when he asks for it, but I don't want to push it on him and just be more of a safe space and like more of a support role than anything. And I thought like, that's such a nice thing. Like you can very easily see your superstar soccer player dad being like overbearing and putting a bunch of pressure on you. And that seems to not be the case at all. So it's very nice to hear.
So he's way better at that than many, many youth soccer dads out here across the city of Austin right now, as a matter of fact. Yeah. So we should probably all take a lesson from that.
All of whose kids are not starting for Dortmund at the age of 17.
right, for sure. If you're Christian Pulisic's dad, you get a pass on this, but nobody else gets to be this way.
Okay, let's jump into that interview with Kristen Markham. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back with that interview. And yeah.
We're happy to be joined here by Kristen Markham, who is the president of Elizabeth Christian Public Relations. This is one part of a series that we're going to do with folks who are local and sort of involved in this effort, which has gone on for a long time. So, Kristen, thanks for joining us.
Hi, thanks.
And one of the things we always usually do on the show is we try to talk about what we're drinking. So I'm having a blood orange cider from Austin East Ciders, and you are?
I am having Sauvignon Blanc, which is my drink of choice, and I don't know what kind it is, because you were nice enough to buy it for me. What kind is it?
It is whatever comes off the bottom shelf screw top at HEB. So we're nothing but the best here.
I'm a cheap date. Okay, yeah. Thanks.
So let's talk a little bit about sort of who you are, your firm is, and what you do in general, because I think public relations is probably not something that people understand all that well to begin with.
No. Well, so we're Elizabeth Christian PR. We're an Austin-based firm. We've been in business for 25 years. I've been there for 20 of it, and we don't do sports. So that's why they hired us.
That's perfect. They're like, yeah. We need people who know nothing about this thing we're doing.
That's right. So, you know, we used to do traditional PR. I started when I was an intern and used to fax a lot and hand carry a lot of stuff. And, you know, now we do video and digital and tell stories in different ways. And can I say you're my client?
I think you can. I think you should probably.
Okay. Yeah. In full disclosure, Jeremiah is one of my clients at Texas Mutual, and we work with Google and St. David's and a whole bunch of different companies. But I guess the folks at Austin FC thought we were a natural fit because we do no sports work.
So how did that happen? So you said you do no sports. You guys are local. The ownership group was not local to begin with. Right. So how do they find y'all?
Well, so that is a meeting I will not forget. So we got a call from Richard Suttle. You know Richard Suttle?
Absolutely. Giant pickup truck, has two daughters, parks it wherever he wants to be.
That's right. And not only is it a giant pickup truck, but it has the most giant horn ever. It sounds like a train horn.
So. And I believe we're not explicit, but I believe he's also Austin's largest a-hole, self-proclaimed. Oh, Austin's largest jackass. Yeah, self-proclaimed. So we can do that. I think we can.
I can bleep it if I need to.
Okay, got it.
We got to where we called him Dr. Suttle because somebody called him that during an interview. Anyway, so we got a call from Dr. Suttle, Richard Suttle, and he said, I've got a great client for you, but you have to sign 100 NDAs. We won't tell you what it's about, but they're going to come in and meet with you. So we were intrigued, and Richard came in, and he brought Dave Greeley, and it was all very cloak and dagger. And then we found out it was soccer. It was potential major league soccer. And we were like, these people are full of it. It does not need to be the secretive. Well, turns out it did, but we were hooked. Elizabeth Christian, who's my boss, knew nothing about soccer. She's a baseball person, but I was really into soccer. One of my coworkers was into soccer. So we wanted to do it right away.
And I remember you, we go to the gym together sometimes. I remember you telling me one day, like, how do you feel about MLS getting the, you know, coming to Austin? I'm like, that is so stupid. Like, there's no way that's going to work. Nobody cares. We don't love soccer. And like, how good do you feel about holding that over me, you know, here years later?
You know, I feel really good about holding that over a lot of people. I'll never forget one of my very early conversations with Phil West at Haymaker. It was like one of the very early events and talking to him. And he was like, this is never going to do you really think this is going to happen? I said, yeah, I fully believe this. I mean, by then I was drunk on the Kool-Aid. And he was like, you just have to say that because you're in PR. And like, fast forward to now, I saw Phil West and his kids at Trail of Lights at the Austin FC display. That was a really satisfying moment.
Did you feel really good about that?
Yeah, we were all wearing our Austin FC beanies, and yeah, that was good.
So y'all worked on that for a while, sort of in the background, and there was not a lot of talk about it. And I believe you were getting ready for an announcement, and then Grant Wall's tweet came out, and things changed. So talk about that.
That was a moment, and I was actually in Columbus for that moment. So there was a lot of planning that went into that behind the scenes. And I'll say there were a lot of lessons learned for my firm. Like I said, we hadn't worked on sports, and they call sports fans for a reason, because it's short for fanatic. And I think we underestimated the vitriol that was going to come out of Columbus. And so I was in Columbus. The rest of my team was in Austin. I wish I'd been in Austin, because facing those people at the crew, the staff members, and telling them, hey, we might move this team to Austin. That was one of the top 10 most awkward moments, I would say, of my professional career. But I remember when the story leaked and then just having to scramble to catch up. And I want to clarify, that leak was not on my team. That was done by the Columbus crew public information guy. But that was not a fun moment.
And that leak was to...
I think he set up the story with the Columbus paper.
Was it the Dispatch? Was it the Columbus?
Yeah.
He's a guy that doesn't work there anymore.
Yeah. I can't even remember, but I do remember watching the color drain from his face as he realized he'd lost control of the story. And, there were some good takeaways from that. And that was how you should never handle an embargoed story.
That's true. Yeah. So, and then I know y'all went through a lot. And then you mentioned that you were excited about soccer because you have a soccer family.
Yeah.
So can you talk a little bit about both having boys that play soccer?
Sure.
And then I believe there's a particular Twitter incident that happened that was awful.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it was actually really poignant for me. So this was summer 2017 when we started working with them. And that tells you something how far ahead they started planning. Summer 2017, we started working on this. And that summer, my dad was born in Germany, came to this country, big soccer fan. So a lot of my childhood was spent listening to terrible German music while my dad had the soccer games on. And my dad actually died that summer. So it was super personal to me. I felt like, oh, I got to do this for my dad. But also, I have three sons, two of them play soccer. One does it well, one doesn't do it well, as you know.
But he's a sweet kid. When he was four and my son was four, they played on a team together and they were
They
were the worst.
The worst.
They cried the whole time.
Embarrassing.
They wouldn't go on. Yeah, my son refused to go on the field because he didn't like wearing equipment. He wouldn't wear shin guards. Yeah, Reed would just wander off in the middle of a match.
Yeah, yeah. He still plays badly. But my other son, Luke, is actually really good. And he plays for Marcus in middle school now, plays for NASA. He's played for Lone Star. So he's great at soccer. So my family really does love soccer. Mike's husband is a great soccer player. He played for Indiana, coached at St. Stephen's for a time at Westlake. So we were legitimately a soccer family. My brother played. I grew up watching it. I never played myself. So I really love soccer. And I remember, do you guys remember there was a time during the campaign when we were trying to get community support? We wanted to show the city council members that Austin really loves soccer. So we came up with the hashtag Austin Loves Soccer. And people were tweeting it. And we were going around town with the signs. And so I made the mistake of tweeting it was a Saturday morning in the spring. It was my ex-husband coaching my son. I said something about it's a beautiful day, Austin loves soccer. And then I shut down Twitter and I went about my day. And I won't forget, it was you that night. You were like, man, rough day on Twitter, huh? And I was like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I couldn't let you ignore that.
And then I opened Twitter and I got the crap kicked out of me on Twitter. People were like, we know you. You're just paid to say you like soccer. You don't like soccer. They were digging into me. You're the president of that firm that, Anthony Precourt hired. They discovered some sinister secret. So I guess I couldn't be the PR firm and actually like soccer.
That's terrible. Although you have a big background in it. So I think one of the other groups that we're going to talk to who are part of this are the Butler brothers. And
yeah.
So I think you had a hand in that and kind of connecting them with the club. And how did that all happen?
That was a lot of fun. So there was a time when they said, You know, I think we were still mostly working with Dave Greeley at the time. And he said, we need a logo. And we knew we were not, you know, the firm to come up with a logo for a soccer team. And so we went around and helped them interview some local firms. And ultimately, the Butler brothers blew everybody else away. So that was a lot of fun. And I feel like we get to take a little bit of credit for the logo that we have now, because we
that Landon and I are having to both be wearing on our heads right now.
That's right. Makes me very happy. But so here's a funny story about that. So we took Dave around to interview at these different firms, and they were all really excited. And they did the interview with the Butler brothers. And at this point, everything is still pretty cloak and dagger, right? And he met Adam Butler of the Butler brothers. And then Adam Butler tried to connect with him on LinkedIn. And I got the angriest call from Dave Greeley. Like, how could he do this? This is supposed to be under the radar. Like, then the color drained from my face. I was like, oh God, I messed up. But Adam unconnected, and they went on to have a great relationship. And now we have the great tree logo.
Yeah. And they rolled it out at the event at North Door. So y'all had a hand in that. I believe
we did.
Were you in charge of confetti cannons?
Thank you for bringing that up.
So
the brand reveal event, we had a hand in that, and I was back at the AV table, and it was my job to tell the guy when to hit the confetti cannon, and I may have said go too soon. Was it too soon or too late? It was too soon, right?
I don't know. There was confetti in the air inside of a bar. I thought it was great. I did not realize there was a timing issue until right now.
But I
appreciate you sharing that.
Yeah, it was a moment too soon, and that is my only memory of the event. I don't know what else happened except for that, and it was all me. So
and
I'm sorry.
And you spent time in a dumpster too, right, at that event?
So here's the thing about PR. It is very glamorous. And so people were entering the North Door through the back alley, and they had to walk by a dumpster. So you could it smelled like...
Like a dumpster.
Yeah, exactly. So because the lid wouldn't shut all the way. So maybe 10 minutes before people were supposed to get there, I was inside the dumpster trying to get the lid to close. And that was like I'm thinking, I'm the president of this firm. I went to college for this, and I'm in a dumpster. Like, this is how much I want soccer to come here. And there were a number of moments like that in this campaign where it was like, I've done a lot of campaigns over 20 years, and this was like, no other.
All right, so let's fast forward to the franchise launch, because I feel like having MLS and Don Garber and Alexi come to town and all those things is probably not. It's not like going to Lubbock with me and like throwing a Texas
Mutual
event.
That's fun too. I love that.
Of course,
we snuck onto the field at the stadium there. That was fun.
Yeah, we did stuck. We did sneak on the field at the stadium, and then we also got stuck inside because we snuck on the field right before the gates closed, and we almost had to climb out.
We
but
like
didn't.
To make work fun
for sure.
You know, so that there was a marked difference from that. So if you look at the brand reveal and all the other community engagement events, it was really, you know, there was this like scrappy, small crew of people doing it. It was my team, my firm. We have, you know, 20 or so people. A lot of us were working on this. But come that event, it was
January 15th.
2018?
Yep.
Is that right? All of a sudden, you had this huge crew from MLS come in, and they just like descended. And then you had some people from the crew who were working for Austin FC come in, and it was like all of a sudden everything changed. And it was great because you had more resources all of a sudden, but you just felt like we have a smaller role in this all of a sudden. Like it's become something bigger, which is great, but it's also a little bit bittersweet because you help make this thing, but you got to let go a little bit. But that was a fun event because it became real. But you got to stay and enjoy the night, I remember.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe like
the night,
overserved a little bit. And I had to go get on a plane to Nashville for another client. So
yeah, I thought
was a bummer.
I remember at the end of that day, like the end of the night was when we went to Torchy's at like 7:30 p.m., which I felt was like midnight. And and then I got home. I thought it was like 5 o'clock in the morning, and my wife Brandy was like still awake, and I'm like, "Hey, why are you up?" She's like, "It's 10:15."
She's like, "Why are you wasted?
That's why. Why are you?" I was like, "Oh man, the train and the Uber are so good, and I hope to use that."
But I remember being so impressed with MLS. They were a well-oiled machine, and they were actually really collaborative when they came in. So that was a good event.
So, okay. So we're moving forward. So we did that. Okay. And then tickets went on sale. Mm-hmm. And apparently Austin was excited about buying tickets.
Just a little.
A little bit excited.
Austin really did love soccer.
Austin. Yeah. Hashtag Austin loves soccer.
I was right. Yes.
Is that still your Twitter header? I think it may be mine because I haven't changed it. So.
You know what? It's mine too.
I think so.
I think it's time to update that.
Maybe. So the website crashes.
Yeah.
And?
So we had our digital person embedded at the Austin FC office for a few days. And like, it was so stressful. I remember Andy Lockney let her bring her dog there for a few days. It's like almost like a service calming animal. And it crashed. And I think she was a big part in coming up with a fix. She was a really pretty brilliant digital mind. And I wasn't there, but I know it was stressful. And I remember thinking like, well, this is a good, it crashed, that sucks, but it's a good thing, right? Like everybody really does want it. And I remember being really impressed that Andy was willing to go on camera and like talk to people directly and say, you know.
Yeah, so what was the fix? Can you walk through that? Not that we don't remember every single moment about everything, but I think y'all made a video.
Jeremiah.
What?
I'm not the digital person. I can pull up the article on it. There was like a workaround to another site and a link. And
yeah,
at the end of the day, it worked. Can we say that?
That's fine. So okay. What did Andy do? Talk about the video.
So the video, he went on and basically said, I'm sorry, it crashed. That wasn't supposed to happen. Here's how we fixed it. And like,
Thanks for loving soccer. Yeah. Thanks for loving us so much. We blew the website up.
Yeah.
So that was good. All right. And then there's the next thing is there's the ownership announcement, the other ownership announcement, yeah. where you got to meet McConaughey.
I did.
And how was that?
Well, that was great. And as you know, that was like the best day of my life, probably outside of the day I birthed my children, because I got to MC the event. I'm sure I was probably the 10th person on the list. Other people were not available. And I was okay with that. I got the ask.
It didn't matter.
No. Yeah. Like maybe 3 days ahead, I got the ask. Like, hey, you're our first choice. We really want you to MC this. And you MC events all the time, right? And I was like, yeah, I do this a lot.
And that was your first event to MC?
Yep.
Okay, good.
But it was a lot of fun. And there was a picture that Tyler took. Tyler's a great photographer that does a lot of their events where Matthew McConaughey is pointing in my face.
And you're both very happy and smiling.
Smiling. And if I remember right, he's telling me, like, you're not going to tell me to stop talking. Because I said, how do I know when to move on? How do I know when you're done? And he's like, I'll tell you.
You'll know.
Like,
I will let you know.
Don't cut me off. And I was like, I got it.
All right. It looked like such an intimate, happy moment at the time when he's like, yeah, don't owe me. And then we had like three meetings that day and you were very distracted for some reason. Like,
yeah, we had to catch an Uber to another event. And then I think we had something else after that. And I just...
You were lost.
And then I went home to my three sons and I was like, look at these pictures. This is me with Matthew McConaughey. This was the best day ever. And they were so unimpressed and just wanted to get Chipotle. And I was like, I'll never be this cool again. And they didn't care.
They're very good about keeping you humble. And then I think one of the last like big events y'all were primarily responsible for was the groundbreaking.
Yeah. Again,
on site.
Yeah, this is like another example of how and why PR. If anybody young is listening and you think you want to go into PR, I want to tell you it is not glamorous. Do you remember? It was kind of windy and dusty. You were there. Were you there, yep. Landon?
No.
Okay. So I just remember getting there and we were supposed to assign seats and like we were going to put paper on the seats, but they weren't done. And we were having to move seats and put the paper down and I don't want to say it was a mess.
But it was a mess?
It was a little chaotic people came in. And then we had to do all these posed photos with people. And Dr. Subtle decided the photos were not as they should be. So he changed them on the fly at that moment.
Like
so,
the order of them?
Yes.
Oh.
The order and the groupings. And that was a big deal. And I was supposed to be coordinating them from the microphone. So hopefully to guess it looked like it was as it should be. But behind the scenes, it felt a little...
It was a little chaotic.
Well,
There's one thing. Chris Bells gave us a good story about him and McConaughey and Richard Subtle in the men's room at that event. So do you have any?
They don't let me in the men's room.
You don't have any bathroom related stories to that?
No bathroom stories. I just remember being covered with dust, like really dirty after that event and thinking, man, this is hard work.
And then also one of the things that I think we all love because you have this vision of a groundbreaking, which is kind of lame. But the shovels and the hard hats were awesome. So,
but I heard those? People kept walking off with the shovels. Like that was a thing.
Yeah, don't make shovels that are so appealing. Andrew Urban has a shovel, which he swears that we were allowed to have. I can neither confirm nor deny that our shovels were like, it was authorized. But yeah, we've got a shovel.
I turn my shovel in.
We've got a shovel that we take to events sometimes, which is really cool.
You and I got a cute shovel picture.
We do. Yeah. Of course we have got a, one of, it's our best shovel picture because it's not the only one for some reason. So you've been in a bunch of Anthem stuff. So do you remember?
Can I talk about the early days of Anthem?
Yeah.
Cause I have some really early memories. Like, so they were watching Josh Babetsky really early on. Like we found Josh online and, you know, we knew we needed some grassroots support, some people who really knew soccer, and like Josh had posted a lot of stuff. So I remember my very first meeting with Josh at Cover 3. And either he had signed the NDA or I had to have him sign it. It was very, now I was being like the weird cloak and dagger person. It felt weird to be that person. So I remember that first meeting. And then I remember the first time he met Dave Greeley. And I had to broker this meeting and it was at the Westin and it was so awkward. And Dave brought a game ball and like threw it at Josh and then Josh didn't quite catch it. And it was like,
this is such a good start. This is off to such a good start.
Oh, this is off to a bad start. But so I think back to that, and then I look now, and like the Anthem is real, and it's such a diverse group, and there are people and drums, and it like almost chokes me up a little bit when I think this almost, you know, there were many times when we could have been Nashville, as y'all talked about earlier, and now it's real, and you have guy friends, Jeremiah.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's like a miracle.
Yeah, every one of my guy friends is somebody I know through soccer, which is something
you're
I
welcome.
Realize. So yeah, thanks for making that happen. Yeah, yeah, and thanks for getting me involved. So I want to wrap it up by asking you, like, what are you most surprised by or like proud of this whole experience?
Sometimes I'm surprised that it's actually happening. I mean, there were times at city council, we were there till 4 a.m. I remember making my son stay till 4 a.m. to testify. And I thought, this is never going to happen. So I see the stadium coming up and I'm just going to be really proud come March 2021 when we're there cheering on a real team.
Yeah, I can't wait for that day too. And y'all have tickets, right?
We do. My firm has tickets, field seats right above the home team on the west side. So we'll be there.
I can't wait till that day, till it starts. So thank you very much for coming on and spending some time with us. And I'm sure we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks.
Yeah. Thanks, guys.
I'd like to thank Kristen for coming on and talking about the behind-the-scenes story of a lot of things that led to the club coming to be a thing, which we will all get to go and watch here just next year. Like, it gets closer all the time. We want to cover a few Anthem events and activities. Landon, why don't you talk about Zenate Musical Collective?
Yeah, so the band is going to be doing a few practices this month in February. So we'll try to do two in February. And then in March, we'll get back onto a weekly schedule. So the next one is going to be February 11th at Hop Squad Brewing. They are kind enough to open their doors to us. So, y'all come out to that. If you're interested in signing up for information about the band, you can send an email to murga@austinanthem.org. We'll also have more details in the show notes.
All right. And the next event after that is Painting with a Twist, which is 2 weeks from today, which will be slightly less than 2 weeks from when the show comes out. But it's on Sunday the 16th. At 2 p.m., you can sign up on the website. It looks like registration is strong, but there are still spots available. So come out for a couple hours on a Sunday afternoon, do some painting, drink some wine, which you bring, and eat some snacks and meet some friends. So we're looking to do this type of thing on an ongoing basis to allow people to connect on things outside of just soccer. But like we talked about in the interview, you know, some of my best friends, and we talked about this on the show before too, like some of my best friends I've met before and that I have like common interests with outside of soccer have been through this experience. So it's another chance to get together and sort of know people outside of just in the Anthem way. But also, as always, visit the website, austinanthem.org. Check out the merch. We've got some good stuff. I believe, Landon, you had the full zip on earlier.
Yeah, I got warm and I took it off, but I was wearing it earlier and I love it.
Yeah, and there's lots of other good stuff like that. To shirts, to coffee mugs, to scarves, to all those things. If you haven't bought your 2020 membership and haven't gotten one of the great flags that we have out there, please go visit the website and do that.
We also want to encourage you guys to check out the Gracklenest Facebook group and then also the Austin FC Reddit. There's been a lot of activity on those and some really cool conversations. And also we'll drop in some semi-secret information in there about the podcast or about Anthem sometime. So it's definitely worth your time checking that out. We want to remind you to leave us a rating and a review and subscribe to the show on your favorite podcasting app. I think that about wraps it up. So we'll be back soon with more Austin FC news, Austin Anthem updates, and special guests. Until then, enjoy your soccer.
Did I do something?
Yeah, it's okay.
Okay.
Okay, go.
Hello, I am Jeremiah Bentley, and all I do is sit on my phone all day. And text and drink beer. That's my life. Thank you.
Are you gonna interview?